Welcome to Worldview Matters, discussing controversial issues, discerning current events, defending biblical Christianity. No topic off limits. And now, here's your host, David Fiorazzo.
Hey, friends, thank you so much for tuning in and watching, listening, sharing the podcast. I love my brother Pete Garcia. I almost said Pete Hegseth because that's what we're going to be talking about, Operation Midnight Hammer. Then we're going to be talking about Israel and the work that they've been doing over there. It's amazing what's been going on. Just what's happening in the Middle East is amazing prophetically. But I want to give Pete's website. It is rev310.net. That's rev310.net, rev310. Pete Garcia, thanks for coming back on the show with us.
Thanks for having me again, David. It's good to be here.
Good to see you. And I know you're traveling. I see your hotel there. You're keeping busy. So very fascinating topic. And as I mentioned to you, I think in an email or a text message, at least to some people, this might seem like, okay, this isn't a program. We don't break news here. On Worldview Matters, we talk about issues and talk about perspectives and everything else, geopolitics. I'm not right on the cutting edge of every news. We weren't meant to keep up with everything. But what we want to do is go back, I guess, several weeks now and talk about Operation Midnight Hammer. I'm curious to see how that's going to show in history, what history is going to reflect. If we're here several years down the road and Jesus doesn't return first, right? So, Pete, you're a former aviator. Your overall conclusion, your thoughts, it was a successful mission. To me, it was amazing. To the average American, we're going, I mean, everything. They carried it out without anyone, the element of a surprise, from Missouri to Iran, bombing the nuclear, the precision with those massive bombs. So everything looked like amazing, but yet the liberal media did what they do, right? So your overall take on it before we dive into some of the articles and details.
Overwhelming success, and hats off to the guys in the Air Force, both in the Guard and the active duty, as well as any naval or Marine and other assets from maybe the UK or whoever else that participated. Look, it was a fully integrated joint force strike package. 125 aircraft. You had ships, you know, aircraft carriers, submarines, launching Tomahawks. You had B-2s dropping GBUs, these massive ordnance penetrators, 30,000-pound bombs. And they achieved what they set out to do. And this is right on the heels of Israel's very successful Operation Rising Lion, mm-hmm. which decimated Iran's military leadership, as well as their senior nuclear scientists. Some are in the neighborhood of 6 to 8 senior generals, now since departed. And then about 20 senior military commanders in the IRGC and various other agencies within their military defense, as well as the decimation of these nuclear scientists, these guys that have the technical know-how to actually build these weapons of mass destruction they're trying to achieve.
Yeah, this is really fascinating to me. First of all, they even thought about sending out decoys. I mean, it seems like they didn't miss anything. But over at BreakingDefense.com, there's an article on Operation Midnight Hammer, how the U.S. conducted the strikes on Iran. And it says the operation included more than 125 U.S. aircraft, dozens of aerial refueling tankers. And I want to ask you about that, Pete, because we didn't see a lot of that on the news. A guided missile submarine, as you mentioned, and approximately 75 precision guided weapons. Just an amazing, I think I saw another article where President Trump, he was aware of the operation, but didn't know it was happening at that time, or he didn't know, because even the military was planning the whole thing out, right? And just, it's just amazing from start to finish. So can you go back and talk about starting in Missouri, sending out the decoys, and then I would love for you at some point to describe the refueling process of these massive B-2 bombers.
Well, yeah, this is a well, you know, this strike on Iran is a long time coming. I mean, the Iranians have been hostile to the United States since 79, since the revolution, the Marine barracks bombing in Beirut. I think it's in
That's right.
83 that killed something like 243 American Marines.
That's right.
They were fully responsible for you know, all the deaths they committed against the Iraqis in their 8-year war, as well as funding and supporting various terrorist factions around the world, to include the Taliban and Al Qaeda and these other groups that the U.S. spent 20 years fighting, and they gave them technical expertise on how to make and build explosive devices, you know, IEDs and drones and other kinds of things. So, and they also give sanctuary to senior Al Qaeda and Taliban leaders. So. They definitely don't have innocent. There should be no claims of innocence from this current regime in Iran that anybody should take seriously, because they have blood on their hands through and through. Not the people, but the leadership of Iran. But moving from Missouri to launch an operation like this, look, I've done numerous air assaults and air missions and other things that I've been involved in planning or participating in. These big movements involving dozens of aircraft is incredibly complex. It takes an immense amount of time to plan and to execute everything that they did, to include the aerial refueling, which is an incredibly
Jeez.
a difficult task. But what it does is it extends American power. The range in which we can reach out and touch people is now global. And it's been global for a while. I mean, we've had
Yeah.
this capability for a long time, but it certainly distinguishes us from, say, the Russians or the Chinese, who have very limited aerial refueling capabilities. And that's why they can't reach out and execute their geopolitical will like they want to. But the US can, because we have that logistics capability. So a significant boost to American firepower is these refuelers who go out and make these B-52s, give them the range and the legs to do what they got to do.
And which is astounding. Everything went off without a hitch. And I want to go back to the article, which says the strike package with 7 B-2 Spirit bombers left Whitman Air Force Base in Missouri. I think it's Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri. They were flying east for 18 hours with, quote, minimal communications towards the target area. So, Pete, when you get out, I'm guessing over the Atlantic, that they refueled over the Atlantic. Explain that, how that works. Where does the fuel come from? What do they land on an aircraft carrier? Does another, plane come over with the fuel? How does that work?
Now they so they these the what are they called? These refueling tankers that they take off and fly with, it's all done in the air. So
Jeez.
basically, that refueler, that B-52 or whatever plane is coming up, or jet coming up behind that plane, will come up behind it. That tanker will begin to extend out this hose. And this hose, I don't know if it's magnetic. I can't tell you the specifics on it, but it syncs up with the jet or the plane, and that connects there. And then they're able to refuel in flight, and that's why they don't have to stop. They can just keep flying.
Wow.
But yeah, that's what gives them that range to keep going. And so I have no love for Whiteman Air Force Base. I was a commander at Fort Riley, and we had to fly in there one time for, I forget what we had to do, and they made us ground taxi like a mile in a Black Hawk in like a hot summer day. So I've never had any love for Air Force, but I think the mission reach capability of the Air Force is pretty amazing. So I'll keep my opinions to myself on that part.
It also says that the National Guard helped make the Operation Midnight Hammer a success. The members in Missouri's National Guard, the bomb wing. So they ended up dropping 14 bunker buster bombs. Thank you, Jeff. Leave that up. Operation Midnight Hammer. I like that. So, Pete, we see the flight plan. We see when they left Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri, roughly the middle of America there, we see the flight path and the destination. Just to explain anything you would like to on this chart.
Well, you know, they've been moving them around. They were down in Diego Garcia, seven of them or 10 of them were down there for a while. And so I think their movements around the globe have been part of this kind of the deception campaign that the U.S. has been subtly waging against the IRGC. And they really weren't sure what we were going to do. And I don't think that they moved anything. They might have moved some stuff preemptively just to have a small supply, but when those B-52s dropped 12 GBU bombs on top of Fordow and two at Natanz, I mean, from the satellite footage looking down, it doesn't look that damaging because these bombs are not designed to do that. They're designed to penetrate into the ground, and they can penetrate up to 200 feet of reinforced concrete. Think about that, 200 feet of concrete. These things can penetrate through that before they detonate. And so you have 12 of those dropped at Fordow. I'm sorry, man. Like whatever's underground there is radioactive soup. It is not going to be recoverable. These bombs have about a 3-ton yield, explosive yield. And as I mentioned at the before, they are not designed to have this huge blast, like a fiery blast necessarily. And there's minimal damage at the surface, but they have an incredibly devastating shock wave that they generate. So think about a shock wave inside of a hardened reinforced structure like concrete. Anything in there is going to be just obliterated. And if you're a human down there, you're going to be a bat. And sorry, it's going to be you're going to be liquefied. I mean, I would think because you're going to be smashed up against a concrete wall at the speed of, you know, whatever, you know, Mach Force 1 or something, Mach 1, you're not going to be much of anything but a stain. So those bombs are incredibly devastating. I don't think there's anything left in there, Fordo, except for radioactive soup.
But Pete Garcia, according to an anonymous tip, a leaker, a traitor, sent information to either the New York Times and or CNN. They said that they didn't put the operation over there in Iraq back very long, maybe a couple months. First of all, what do you think about the fact that we still have people, whether they're from the deep state, they're enemies of Trump for sure, maybe enemies of America. But we have leakers that would do something like that. What do you think about that? And then the irresponsibility of a CNN or a New York Times to report something like that.
I mean, look, if Trump announced the cure for cancer tomorrow, that they would still find negative ways to criticize him or criticize this discovery or whatever, that this discovery was racist or that it was, you know, MAGA or whatever. I think the fact that you can look at the before and after pictures of Fordow specifically and notice the geographic features there, the hills, the rocks and all that, and then look at the after shot and it's smooth. And again, these bombs are not designed to do surface damage. So the fact that that surface is radically changed and flattened tells me that whatever was under there, concrete or otherwise, is a hot mess. If you think back to Hezbollah when they took out Nasrallah, I don't know the size of that bomb or the two bombs they dropped on his headquarters. But afterwards, man, you could look down into that. It was a huge cavern that these bombs generated. The bombs they dropped in Fordow and in Iran that the US dropped, more powerful than those. And I don't think they're ever going to pull anything out of Fordow ever again. Now, Isfahan was the other, the more the what they claim as the civilian side for their nuclear capabilities. That was hit by dozens of Tomahawk missiles. So that was launched from that submarine. So that was taken out other strategic targets that were more on the surface level, buildings and whatnot that they use for their capabilities there.
So do you think we're going to
Sure.
take a break in a minute, Pete, but do you think that the rest of the world is looking at the Trump administration and America and going, okay, I guess they do mean business?
I think so. Yeah, I think so. And I think that between the tariffs and these the Israeli attack on Iran and the fact the US backed them, and it is going to change dynamics in the Middle East quite significantly. And we'll have to kind of wait and see what happens with Ukraine and Russia and how that kind of plays out. But I think this has given pause to China on their Taiwan ambitions, and this is probably giving pause to Kim Jong-un Un on repatriating the whole continent or the whole peninsula there of Korea. So I think it's making some of these leaders second guess their decisions.
So, one more question before we take a break. After this hugely successful mission that should go down in history as just an amazing feat accomplished by America, not just for America, but for the world to take out these nuclear sites. What do you think that's going to do to Air Force, Army, Marine, Navy recruitment in the military? It's
Oh,
already off the
it's
charts.
gonna keep. Yeah, it's definitely an image booster, considering that U.S. military recruiting tanked at, right after the Afghanistan withdrawal, and for that really that next couple of years, it's been super low. They've been barely meeting, if not not meeting their quotas across the board. So yeah, Pete Hegseth coming back in as SecDef. And the fact that he was a he retired as a major, he was trains with the troops, he's young, fit, he's got tattoos, he relates to them. It's a huge boom for recruitment, and it's about time, really. I mean, I think a lot of these former SecDef guys are coming out of either senior general positions, and they're going straight into to the military industrial complex, back into these kind of appointed positions, and they're just it's so shady and so just corrupt. We need a new blood in.
Amen, brother. Well, when we come back with Pete Garcia, we're going to talk about how the Middle East is potentially being reshaped. Also, how Israel's 12-day Iran war may have even outdone the 6-day war. That's coming up next.
Today's show is brought to you by Harbingers Daily, world news biblically understood. Stay informed at harbingersdaily.com.
So over at the Jerusalem Post, many great articles there, Pete. And the one I pulled up said that perhaps, I mean, they're talking about the 6-day war, and that even before these 12 days that they're referring to, Israel had carried out takedowns of Hamas and Hezbollah, helped cause the fall of the Assad regime in Syria. But in some ways, what it did during these 12 days that they're referring to was more important for all the Iranian proxies to see their leader pummeled into submission. And what they're doing, what they have done, that's what I think partially maybe influenced President Trump to join the fray and to start this, putting together with the help of Pete Hegseth and others, the Operation Midnight Hammer. So your thoughts on how this article is talking about comparing this 12-day Iran war with the 6-day war historically. And it's really a fascinating comparison. And anything else you'd like to share about that, Pete?
Yeah, this feels like it's kind of the completion of the 6-day war in a way, but both have very similar things that they compare, and also different things that they contrast on. So, in keeping with Israeli national security doctrine, they looked at both instances, both in 1967 and here recently, as existential threats to the nation of Israel. So both wars were both preemptive strikes that relied on speed and surprise, and I think both of those did that. I think the differences are probably more than the similarities, but the differences being that in 67 Israel fought nation states. They fought Israel, or they fought Jordan, Syria, and Egypt, and this time they just fought one nation state and then four proxies: Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Houthis, and I'm forgetting somebody, I'm sure. If there's some other groups there operating in Judea and Samaria, but anyways, so there's those differences. Also, the other major differences. I think this strike here was incredibly complex. It took years and years of infiltration by Mossad. It took years of planning. I mean, they've been wanting to do this, in my recent memory, just, really since about the 2012, 2013 timeframe was that when they seriously started championing this to the United Nations and everyone else. So I think that it was an incredibly complex mission that they did, incredibly more successful than what we did. They were basically able to successfully decapitate the IRGC leadership and really send Khamenei, you know, hiding. He's in some hidey hole somewhere, like Saddam Hussein was back in during the Iraq War. So I don't even know that Khamenei makes it out of this alive. I don't think he does. I think he's 86 years old. He's not in great health. He's in really poor health. His whole worldview has come crumbling down. I just, all of the people that he keeps appointing to take over keep getting taken out. So I don't know. I think I'm kind of mixed on this. I kind of think this is the end of this particular version of Iran's history.
So then let's, you know, maybe speculate a little bit more. What will the country of Iran look like then? And how is that going to change? Who's going to take power? And could there be even more radical people taking power?
Well, the Bible does give us a great outline of the things to come. And in one of those battles is the Battle of Gog and Magog. And this is this multi-nation front that attempts to surround and overwhelm Israel. And it says they come from Magog and all the nations that are listed there. But the nations that we don't have any question over is Persia. Persia is listed there, and there's no dispute over who that's talking about. Now, granted, Persia was probably considerably larger back at the height of their dynasty. So that may incorporate parts of Iraq and other places. But by and large, these nations it seems to be Russia, Turkey, and Iran partner together for the first time in human history and try to overwhelm Israel. But what's also interesting is the other nations and the other people groups that are invited or that join this endeavor. And so I look at what's going on right now with the conflicts in Russia and Ukraine, and we look at the conflicts with Israel and Iran and all of the proxy terrorist groups that Israel's been taking out strategically. And I think, okay, well, that's who's being in play right now, and they're greatly being decimated. But there's vast, vast numbers of men of military fighting age that still live in the former Soviet satellite states of Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan. Also from Africa, we know they come from Libya and from Sudan area, Kush and Put. So we see a great vast number of Muslim military age fighting males coming up from that area. And I also think that it's going to drain Europe of their militant military age fighting males. And it'll be like a reverse crusades. Something happens to the world. The U.S. is no longer able to protect Israel. Israel is in disarray. Western civilizations went in disarray. And the enemies of Israel finally think this is the perfect time to launch a surprise attack. And whether the satellites are down or whether Israel is just not expecting it because they're living in peace and security, these groups begin to mass and try to take out Israel. And God supernaturally devastates these armies. And so I think that for Israel, this is incredibly uplifting in the sense that prophecy is being fulfilled, but it's also terrible for them because they don't have the New Testament. So for them, the Battle of Gog and Magog is the last major war. And they may incorporate parts of Zechariah 12 and 14 into the Gog-Magog battle, but they don't have the book of Revelation. I'm talking about Israel and the Orthodox Jews and then those that don't subscribe to Christianity. They don't have the book of Revelation. So for them, it at the end of Gog and Magog, it may be the time where they finally think that the kingdom has arrived and some guy sets up on the stage and says, hey, let's just finally make this peace deal once and for all between Israel and the world. And so it's good in the sense that it's going to shore up their belief in God in the sense that God is still fulfilling prophecy. The downside is they don't have the New Testament, so they think that's right. It. They think they're done, and that's where the deception comes in.
Wow. Thank you for bringing the perspective of Bible prophecy into this, Pete. Appreciate that very much. I want to give your website one more time, rev310.net. But I also want to bring it back to America for the last 3 minutes here. Two brief articles I want to mention. One of them is over at townhall.com. Guy Benson wrote, it's official. Democrats are now the anti-Israel party, and it's not even close. They're now pro-Palestinian. But over at the New York Post, this is from earlier this year. A survey came out, a Gallup survey, found that 60, 60% of Democrats are anti-Israel. This is the first time ever for a major U.S. political party. Just to compare, and I want to get your thoughts, 33% of Democrats have a favorable view of Israel. By comparison, 83% of Republicans have a favorable view of Israel. So, Pete, this is interesting politically for America. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it just shows the distance we've fallen as far as our Judeo-Christian roots and in the understanding of the special role that the nation of Israel has with the God of our Bible. And it's not that he loves them more than he loves anyone else, but he has a covenant with them, and God is not a liar. He can't lie. He's not a man that he could lie. So he is going to keep that covenant. And so in the Bible, there's two types of covenants that we see. There's the unconditional covenants, for example, with Abraham and David, where there was no stipulations put on it. This is something that God intends to do, and he's going to do it. And the other one is a conditional covenant, and that's things like the Mosaic Law, the 613 laws that fall inside of the Torah, that this is the if-then. If you obey me, then you will be blessed. If you don't obey me, then you will be you'll have all kinds of problems. And so it's one of the things that has been a special relationship with Israel and the God that we worship, the God that created the entire universe. And this is how he set it up. I didn't set this up. Trump didn't set this up. Netanyahu didn't set this up. This is the way that the God that we look at our Bible and we believe it to be true, that it's Holy Spirit inspired. And if that's true, then Israel still has a special role to play in these last days. Yeah. And the fact that much of Western Christendom has subscribed to things like amillennialism or preterism or postmillennialism, and these eschatologies are way off base, and they all have something in common. They greatly diminish or dismiss totally outright the nation of Israel.
Yes.
And I think it's to their detriment, and it's to the West's detriment that these eschatologies have flourished and have influenced the senior leadership now within even the Republican and conservative sides of our politics, that they no longer understand Israel's role. And to them, it's just another country. And so that is going to be to our own detriment. And I don't know exactly what that spells out, but it's not good.
Yeah. And replacement theology and others just shows the biblical illiteracy that's been just off the charts in recent years, as Barna and Gallup and Pew all have done surveys on. But Pete Garcia, thank you so much. Very fascinating topic to me, talking about the mission and then Israel, the Middle East, then bringing it back to not only our political parties, but the church and our lack of influence as salt and light. But brother, we'll do this again, Lord willing. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's been a blessing.
You're welcome. God bless you, friends. Thanks for watching, listening, and sharing. And as always, keep speaking the truth about things that matter.